Jim Shoemaker, Scott Jordan, and Steve Anderson are registered representatives and investment advisor representatives of Securian Financial Services, Inc., securities dealer, member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor. Shoemaker Financial is independently owned and operated.
Helping you make the most of your money. It's time for Talk Money. Now, your host, Jim Shoemaker.
Whether you're a baby boomer or a millennial, it doesn't seem to matter. A common concern is always money. Well, welcome to today's program. I am so excited about today. We've got great guests lined up for you and just going to walk through some things that are looking from economics and what's happening with interest rates. And then we're going to talk about the stock market and really how to build a portfolio. And we do have a question that is a great question. I mean, kind of off of the wall question, but it's a great question. We're going to dive into that, give our panel of guests here a chance to answer that. Well, let me tell you what the lineup is. We've got, first of all, Mr. Greg Valliere. He's the Chief U.S. Policy Strategist with AGF Investments. He's going to dive into a little bit of the Washington update and really what's going on with interest rates, economy, and we might dive into some politics. You never know. It's a great time to just talk. And also, Steve Anderson, he's going to talk about the stock market basics, and Scott Jordan is going to dive into portfolio construction. All right, our first, and I mean right off the top, Mr. Valliere is with us today. And so again, I just want to remind you, he is the Chief U.S. Policy Strategist for AGF Investments, a frequent guest of ours, dear friend. And I guess, Greg, thank you, sir, for being a part of the program today. Welcome.
Great to be with you, Jim.
All right, let me just start with this question, because I think everybody, there's opinions, you hear this, you hear that. Has the Federal Reserve finally finished its rate hikes? And I think people are saying, probably not. I mean, you could, I'm almost, I can gather a room and get a third, a third, and a third. Yes, no, maybe.
No, they haven't finished, unfortunately. They've got another move or two to go. We have a meeting coming up in July. We have testimony also from the Fed Chairman, Jerome Powell. But I think that at the July meeting, they'll move by 25 points, probably another move in the fall, and that might do it. But the problem for the Fed is that the labor market is so hot, and the economy has surprised. And most people had thought the economy by now would be starting to soften. Ironically, the economy looks really strong, maybe too strong for the Fed.
Do you see that as we talk about inflation, we talk about recession. Is this a signal that maybe even if they raise the rates again, 25 basis points, as you said, twice, maybe in July, maybe later on in the fall, is the economy so strong that a recession is, avoidable?
It could be. I mean, you and I have talked, Jim, about how a recession, if we did get one, would be very mild. I'm not even sure we're going to get a mild recession. The labor market is so strong. Everywhere I travel, and maybe for you guys as well, I hear stories from business owners who say, we can't find workers. We've run out of cooks, waiters, waitresses, plumbers, painters, and high-tech jobs as well. So with a labor market this strong, I think we could avoid a recession.
Wow, that's important. And then can we control inflation with avoiding? I mean, that doesn't seem like an equation. I can't say a recession. If I avoid a recession, can I actually slow inflation down? But we're actually doing that. Do you see these two next rate hikes bringing inflation down to what would be acceptable by Mr. Powell?
Well, the Fed would like inflation of 4%, and we're at 2%, and we're getting there. We're about 4% now, and it's going down, but there's still a threat. I think Powell is determined to get down to 2% and to stay there. He does have one thing to worry about, though, and that is, could the economy start to soften by fall or winter because of commercial real estate? Everywhere I go, commercial real estate is hurting. A lot of vacancies, a lot of people don't go to work traditionally anymore. They work from home. So that is a concern that the housing market could weaken, especially commercial real estate. If that were to happen, could that affect the banks? And I think because of that, Powell has to draw the line. At some point, he's going to have to say that's it on the rate hikes. But I think that doesn't come until well into the fall.
Wow, that's some, you know, this has been a weird economy because you talk about, I mean, actually jobless claims, you know, the average, the four-week moving average is up to 249,000. That's the highest since November. I mean, you know, we just, it's kind of an amazing the thing that we're talking about that we knew we had inflation that was getting out of control, and yet we dropped it so dramatically successfully. And, you know, there's data out that says if you can lower inflation like that over a period of time, the market usually responds in a very favorable way. Do you see that?
I think so. And there's another factor, Jim, and that is, believe it or not, here in Washington, D.C., there's a bit more restraint on spending. If you look at what happened on the debt ceiling fight with Kevin McCarthy, the House Speaker, he got some spending cuts. Or to be accurate, we're spending at a less robust rate. Spending's not going up as much as it had been going up. That's another good story that would keep inflation under control.
But you talk about the budget deal, and that's a month ago. Now, I just read recently, and I mean, this was disturbing, that the debt service as of the end of May was 13% of our tax revenue. That's the highest since 1999. Are you thinking that deficits, I mean, are deficits going to persist? And with what we got going on? I mean, you know, again, I look at what they did accomplish, but it was kind of around the edges. It wasn't sustainable or substantial, let's say. It wasn't substantial. And, you know, even though it looked good, but it, we know you got to do more. Do you think that the Washington bureaucrats and just reality, those that are making these decisions, are willing to take in and make the tough decisions?
I think that there's a realization in both parties, but especially among the Republicans, that we spent too much at the end of the pandemic. In hindsight is 2020, and then looking back at this, I think clearly we spent too much on infrastructure, a whole bunch of stuff. But I think now that that attitude has become the consensus, we will see spending slowing. And I think that's a positive story.
Wow, that's critical. I mean, wow, spending slowing, and that's a big deal. If you just tuned in, my guest is Greg Valliere. He is the Chief U.S. Policy Strategist, AGF Investments. And he does a fabulous job of giving us the update of really what's going on in Washington from the, you know, economy, what's happening there, and the political side. I have to ask the question, and this is, I guess, a political question because, you know, Mr. Blinken has just been to China. They've got all the photo ops. They got all the things they got going on. And you have the president, you know, of our country calling the Chinese a president, a dictator. I mean, do you see what's going on with China? And is there a chance there's any type of a breakthrough with the between the U.S. and China?
I think things are going to stay pretty rocky. And we have a president who sometimes doesn't isn't careful in what he says.
Oh, you
and
think?
So we had, you think just a little bit?
Just a little bit.
So yesterday, Joe Biden says, after a pretty good meeting between Xi and Blinken, Joe Biden says Xi's a dictator. And I think that did damage. And there's another story that I think will do damage to relations, and that is all these reports of a military base being constructed in Cuba, 100 miles from the Florida coastline. I think that also is going to keep U.S.-China relations quite rocky.
You know, when you talk about that, how do you see that affecting, I mean, when you think through this whole process, China, you know, a huge world power, would like to take us over economically, over and actually take the place of being the number one economic country in the world. Do you see that as affecting us long term? Is that, how do we as a country manage through that? I mean, we've had crisis before. It used to be Russia.
Yeah.
Now it's China. What? How do you picture that in the future for us, the next generation?
I am fairly optimistic on this. I don't see China invading Taiwan. I think China realizes that would be suicidal for them. I don't see the dollar being replaced as the major currency in the world. I still see good demand for U.S. treasuries, which is positive, even though deficits are high. So there are a lot of good stories. And you look at the Chinese economy right now, and it's mediocre. They've gone through a difficult year. So I still think the U.S. is in pretty good shape, especially as I said earlier, as I look at the labor market, inflation under control or getting there, and an economy that's still growing.
You know, we've talked about And I so much appreciate where you come from, because you've got that optimistic mindset, and yet you're able to look and peel back and dig into it and be very open and straightforward with us. And I so much appreciate that. There's no, Greg, there's no spin with you. And I, that's what I enjoy when we talk together. You talked about interest rates and recession, you know, inflation and recession, which is, you know, which do you want, recession or inflation? Then you talked about the economy, a strong labor market. Now, let me pause for just a second and ask you the kind of the $64,000 question, and that is politics. We're in the middle of a, not yet, I'm sorry, but we're at the beginning stages of an election year in 2024. And the front runner for the Democrats or, you know, Mr. Biden, and the front runner for the Republicans, and we know former President Mr. Trump. All right, where do you see it going, and what can we anticipate just because of the history of what goes on in Washington?
Well, I would have to say, Jim, that most Americans would like a different choice. A lot of Americans that I talk to say, I'm in favor of none of the above. So they're looking for some fresh blood. And a majority of Democrats have said to poll takers that they would prefer somebody other than Joe Biden. And his age obviously is a factor. And in the last few days, Donald Trump's polls have slipped a bit as well. And I think an awful lot of voters in this country would like a different Republican nominee. But we may wind up with the same two, Biden and Trump. And the economy, you're absolutely right, will be crucial. And I think that if the economy grows well, believe it or not, I think Trump has a chance to get reelected. We're a long way away. I think there are more indictments to come. There's more out there. But I do think that an 80-year-old Joe Biden is not that appealing to many voters. And, of course, if he won a second term, he would be leaving the White House at the age of 86.
That's amazing that we think about that. Now, let me ask this question, because somehow, you know, we're seen as the world currency. We're seen, of course, as a country with a dominant economic system. We're a democratic system. We're a free enterprise system, a capitalistic system. And that's all for year after year after year, basically since World War I, World War II, that has put us at the top of the heap. Now, as we think through this process, is there anything that you see that puts us in jeopardy for that status? I mean, I have to say this. This is where probably it's not economic, but when you've got one president saying one thing and it's back and forth, and there's this being very condescending, very argumentative, very get even with you type mentality. Is that not divisive enough to tell the world that we don't know how to work together? Do you understand what I'm asking? It's not good for us.
Let me make two quick points. I think if we continue to have this very divisive rhetoric that, you know, elections have been stolen, we don't have a legitimate president, you know, we get this on and on and on, and I think an awful lot of Americans will either tune out or maybe be attracted to more radical groups who feel that we need to do something that could be dangerous. So there's that, number one. Number two, though, is economic, and that is, are we willing to pay our bills for things like Social Security, Medicare? Both Social Security and Medicare only have a few years left before they start to not be totally solvent. That's not a spot where you want to be. You've got to convince the public to take tough action, but the politicians and the public are chicken. They're unwilling to do what has to be done for things like Social Security.
Mm. All right. That's, you know, I'd love to talk to you a lot. We've run out of time. There's so much we could talk about. I want to just say we'll have you back and just kind of catch up mid-year, maybe a little bit more about what's going on. And, you know, I my last question, and I just want to close out with this, is there any tax changes coming up that could affect the investor?
I don't think so, Jim. The majorities are so narrow in both the House and Senate. I don't see a majority that would say, oh, yeah, let's raise the estate tax or let's raise the capital gains tax. I don't see it. I don't see the votes. You know, in 2025, next Congress, they're going to have to address the Trump tax cuts, which expire in 2025. But for the next couple of years, I think for all of your listeners, what we see is what we're going to get. We're not going to get any tax changes, and I think that's a good story.
Yeah, that's great. I so much appreciate it. Well, Mr. Greg Verriere, he is the Chief U.S. Policy Strategist, AGF Investments, super guy. Thank you so much, sir, for spending time with us this morning out of your busy schedule. We'll definitely have you back as we talk about just really what's going on in Washington, D.C. with a Washington update. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Jim. I enjoyed it.
All right, man. You know, guys, I mean, you know, Scott and Steve, it's great to listen to him and hear him. But when we talk about, you know, stock market and, you know, what's going on and his idea around recession and interest, Steve, what's your take on as far as, you know, when we talk about stock market basics? I mean, what did you hear him say?
Yeah, just kind of cueing off the back of what some of the things Greg said. You know, when we think about recession, there are parts of the economy that have certainly recessed already. And some of those are even starting to come back, whereas now other parts of the economy are starting to recess. When we think about recession, what we're typically worried about is the entire economy slowing down.
And unemployment going up.
Right, and unemployment. And that's why unemployment has been so stubborn. And Powell's scratching his head and the Reserve Board is scratching their head because the economy has been lumpy coming out of just an unprecedented set of monetary and fiscal maneuvers coming out in the midst of COVID and following COVID. And so it's just been really lumpy. So you hate to say this time's different because that's never a recipe
never
for
a
success.
Good recipe, right.
But at the same time, I mean, really, this has been different. So that was when he was talking about recession, that's what came to mind for me is the lumpiness in the different areas of the economy.
And what I heard and what I totally agree with is that the economy has been much more resilient than a lot of people anticipated. I like what you said, Steve, about, you know, parts of the economy. I've been talking a while about a rolling recession. It kind of rolled through housing, rolled through manufacturing. And the flip side of that is, based on recent numbers, we're starting to see some of those earlier recessed areas move into an expansion territory. Housing being one example. Housing starts kind of surprised to the upside. So I think a recession is avoidable. I do think what a lot of people are talking about around right now, the commercial real estate may be the next shoe to drop, but I don't know how widespread even that would be. Maybe we can roll through that if there are some issues in that sector and move on out of that, because industrial real estate with big projects is really booming, and multifamily is really booming.
Well, exactly. And, you know, I think we're going to read about this 10 years from now and get a better answer than we have today, because really, you use the word unprecedented, and the reality, I'm still trying to, though, Steve, you mentioned the Fed scratching their head. I'm trying to picture that, how they would be doing
Well, they
that.
Wouldn't. They wouldn't be caught on film
doing that,
right? Or they wouldn't say it that they
I
were doing
you.
That.
I got you. I mean, so it's a figure of speech.
That's right. Yeah. This would be behind scenes with no transcriptions going on.
Yeah, because they guarantee you, they never want to give the impression they don't have a clue. They are always talking about this is what they're confident that's going on.
That's right.
That's that mindset that they have. But I do like the fact that it is unprecedented. I mean, again, even Greg said it, you guys are saying it. The reality is the labor market's strong. I mean, you talk to anybody trying to hire people, they can't find people. And then you're talking about interest rates have come down. Now, maybe they're not there yet. And, you know, the Fed's saying to it, Mr. Powell's saying 25 basis points, maybe more.
Yeah, and a lot we get questions a lot of times, that, oh, gosh, is the Fed going to raise rates two more times? You know, is that the end of the world? Look, we've raised rates 21 times.
Yeah.
Are the last two going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back? I mean, for all intents and purposes, we're pretty close to the top, yeah. Right? So I wouldn't make too big a deal out of, is it one more, two more, but none more? I mean, we're close.
So I guess, well, I want to make sure that we come back. I'd like to find out our take on what does that mean, even though you say it's close. Should there something our listening audience should be paying attention to for the fall if that happens? What should that do to our investment portfolio? If you really look at it, I mean, there's a major, major increase in amount of money. I mean, right now, 14.5% of the people, the workers, are putting more money in their plan, you know, their 401k plan than they were doing this time last year.
Well, I mean, it feels a little better at the moment. Yeah. So heck, yeah. I mean,
you know, you're right. But I mean, there's a mindset.
Yeah.
And so I think we are feeling we're a little more optimistic.
We've a little bit of that herd mentality.
Yeah, we talk about that. We'll go back to that. I'll get Scott to come out. We've got a question that we're going to answer when we come back. You will not believe the question, but it's a real question, and it's got a twist to it. So I think it's great and looking forward to going through that process. If you just tuned in, my guest, Steve Anderson and Scott Jordan, we're talking about stock market basics and some things that you need to just think through. When you're buying a stock, what are you doing? And what's inflation? Is that important for you when you think through that? What about a recession? And Scott Jordan is going to really go through that process with us one more time about portfolio construction and some things you need to be doing. We covered some of that last week, but we're going to dive into it really in depth to keep you going so you'll know what we're doing. Stay with us. We'll be back in a minute. I'm Jim Shoemaker. This is Talk Money.
This material represents an assessment of the market environment at a specific point in time and is not intended to be a forecast of future events or a guarantee of future results. This information is not investment advice or a recommendation. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investments will fluctuate and when redeemed may be worth more or less than when originally invested.
Helping you make the most of your money. Talk Money with Jim Shoemaker on News Talk 98.9.
Neither Shoemaker Financial nor Securian Financial Services are affiliated with Greg Villiers or AGF Investments. The views and opinions expressed are those of Greg Villiers only and have not been presented on behalf of or endorsed by Securian Financial Services, Inc. or Shoemaker Financial.
Helping you make the most of your money, it's time for Talk Money. Now, your host, Jim Shoemaker.
Welcome back. As you can tell, we've got a coming up question that I can't wait to get these guys' opinions on this question. Let me kind of couch it for you. It came in this past Wednesday at the show that we did with Ditch and Tim Van Horn. It's a fun question, but it's legitimate. Here's the question. What happens with all the media? What happens to the economy? What happens to the market if all of a sudden somebody who has been saying they're here, aliens, and they walk out and introduce us to one? In other words, a real being, a real, I can't say person, but a real alien, whatever that is, has now landed and we have one and we are introducing it to the world. How would that affect the market? I'll start with you, Steve, and we'll just dive into it. You see what I'm, you see the question?
Yeah, I mean,
hey, science fiction, but maybe it's real.
You know, some of the COVID stuff was science fiction till, you know, it happened and I was in my house for 2 weeks, couldn't leave. That was weird. My initial reaction to this would be that in reality, I mean, that would be a crazy event, right? But I would put that a little bit in the camp of what happens if China invades Taiwan? What happens if the Russia-Ukraine crisis escalates and becomes nuclear or, you know, just fill in the blank with any other crisis. So I think it would certainly jar the economy. It would jar investors. It would rattle things, no doubt. But ultimately, the market is essentially a mechanism to take money from people who are saving money, to put money in the coffers of companies that are trying to magnify and create wealth out of that money. And it's a capitalist mechanism. So it's transferring money to where it's best used. And just like world wars of the past or other crazy events of the past, I think the ultimate outcome, even though it might be volatile, the ultimate outcome is it's probably a non-event unless they take over the world, which at that point, I mean, the money that you've got anywhere else is gone too. So, I mean, you know, we could, I don't know, but I
appreciate the fact that the questions come in for us this morning because, again, I hadn't planned on doing this, but I think it's I think what happens is the news media puts it out in our minds and we just run it through our minds multiple times. What if crisis, as you say, you know, those things could happen? You know, Scott, your take.
Well, I think those kind of thoughts or those kind of, you know, stories can make you an emotional person. And you know, like we always say, emotions are the enemy of any good investment strategy. And I don't think, like Steve said so well, I don't think you can build investment policy around these really scary events that we think, what if this happens? What if that happens? Because, I mean, like we said, we're putting our money to productive use in order to give it to people that are going to create the goods and services we all love and enjoy. And I don't think that has historically stopped from any of the crazy events we've been through, that whether that be a world war or a Cuban Missile Crisis or any other crisis of the day that we have to go through. I think good companies would get back to do them. Now, this is a wild card, because I think you got to, what are they here for, right? Are they here to take over? Are they here to hang out with us?
Why do we always assume they're smarter than us?
Well, I mean, like, we always assume we're the idiots.
Well, I mean.
Oh, Steve.
Look around. I don't think you guys are giving these aliens enough credit, honestly. If they really know what we're about, I think we're going to be the last ones to know, because they're going to go first to two places. Switzerland and any other offshore place people keep their money.
Right.
And those places don't produce news to us very quickly.
That's probably
that's
fair.
That's a great point. Tyler, I mean, that's a great way of looking at it, too. I mean, the fact is, I mean, let's go back to 9/11. I can remember I was in Canada in a meeting when 9/11 occurred. Now, that was not an expected crisis, but it was really a crisis, because for that day, as we were all glued to the TV watching what was going on, and then realizing that, my goodness, are we about to be, is this about to become a world war?
Right.
And this is just the beginning phases. And that was going through everybody's mind for 24 to 48 hours. That would be a similar thing if we all of a sudden introduced ourselves to Zarnek, the guy from wherever, or lady from wherever. I don't know.
Yeah, and I would put that, there was a book by Nassim Taleb, I think is how you say his name, but it was called The Black Swan Event. And if you take all these things that have a very low probability of occurring, what's the probability of the aliens landing and taking over the world? Like, you know, it's above zero. China invading Taiwan, above zero. Russia, Ukraine. You know, you take all the things that might happen. None of them individually is likely to happen. But when you put all of them together, there's a measurable probability that something crazy could happen, which is why we as investors tend to, and Scott will talk about this when we talk about portfolio construction, but this is why diversification is important. It's because none of these events are likely, but all of them together, something is going to happen sometime, right? And so that's why you just have to be careful and informed and intentional about the way you build your investment profile.
You know, I think that's critical to be informed. And, you know, I was reading something recently that came out from Schwab that I thought was really great, because their investors today, we're seeing that from their modern wealth survey that they do annually, and this is the first time it's gotten to this level, 50% of Gen Zs, these are people that were born 1996 to 2014, make investment decisions based on what they see in the media and what their friends tell them.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. Now, guys, I hate to tell you, 30% of all Americans make it based on friends and what they see. So when we talk about, you know, basics when it comes to building a portfolio, I want to talk a little bit about that. I wanted to introduce it, though, because of what Steve was saying. Because, Steve, when we talk about the stock market right now, I mean, whether it's an alien, whether it's something, a crisis like 9/11, whether it's China building a, you know, a military base in Cuba, all of that plays in. But there's some fundamentals. And I know a lot of people are so concerned about inflation.
Yeah.
Talk about that from a standpoint when it comes to stock market basics.
Yeah, inflation's a double-edged sword in some ways. I mean, just think about, Greg mentioned earlier in the program, you mentioned the debt, right? Our debt, debt service. Well, the irony of inflation is it basically transfers money from the donator of debt, right? The giver of the debt, and it transfers it to the recipient of the debt. So said another way, if inflation runs a little bit hot for the next few years, it makes the cost of our debt actually go down. So it actually helps the debt situation. So it's good in that respect. On the flip side, when the cost of the food you're eating at the grocery store is going up at 9 or 10% a year like it was last year, that's a problem, right? And so there's this sweet spot, and it's an arbitrary number. The Federal Reserve Board has picked 2% out of thin air. right? But it's a number that represents, if inflation's 2%, you can't just bury money in the backyard and be okay. It forces you to put that money in a bank account. And when it goes in a bank account, the bank can lend that money out. And that money becomes more money because it moves into the economy and it creates expansion for those dollars. And so a little bit of inflation forces money to move around and forces the economy to go. But too much inflation really devalues our wealth. And that was the scare last year, is that everything was just going up so fast that every time you go to the store, the bill was 10% higher. I mean, that's tough.
You know what? I actually went on a diet during that time, too.
Well, that was probably an opportune time, actually. If you eat 10% less.
I was going to say, did you lower it by 10%?
I lost it by 10%. That was critical, guys. Hey, take advantage of an opportunity.
That was a perfect show for last year. We should have done that last year. That was brilliant.
All right, but now let's talk about this from a standpoint. Inflation, because recession's the other word when it comes to basic portfolio and looking at stock market basis. Inflation, recession, in your opinion, which is the one we don't want to have? In other words, if you had to make a choice, I'd choose one or the other.
Well, and this is an opinion on this, but we have a lot of investors who get super conservative. It's called a conservatism bias. And they just put money in the bank and they call it good. And that's not always bad, right? But if you have all your wealth in the bank, it's not really going to grow. And so that can become an issue. But the thing about that is they leave it there and they don't see the money going down. Yet as the price of everything goes up, the value of that money goes down. It's a silent killer. It's like sitting in the garage with your car on and the door down. Carbon monoxide will get you eventually, right? It's a silent killer. So inflation's the silent killer, and long term, it's way worse than recession. Hmm. Recession is just getting kicked in the face one time. You got to heal and move on. And that's probably a bad analogy, but that's kind of what it is. So recession typically happens, and we move through it. It shakes out parts of the economy. And in a capitalist system, it kind of gets rid of some companies that probably shouldn't have been there anyways, frankly. So it can be a healthy thing. But I would say, ultimately, inflation long-term is worse, even though recession in the moment feels worse.
Yeah, I can understand that. I think inflation in the moment, recession in the moment feels worse, but you're right. It's usually got a timetable to it. And I like the fact that I know that it's going to, over the next 12, maybe 18 months, 20 months or whatever, I'm going to be out. We'll work our way out of it. Inflation just keeps chipping away and beating down your kind of that mindset. So I think Powell has got his strategy two more times, and we understand that. What would you say as far as the investor, and when Scott's talking about some fundamentals of building a portfolio, what would you, as you talk to clients today, what do you leave them with when it comes to what you see for the rest of the year?
Yeah, I would say I'm going to give you a guess as to what I think is going to happen. But I would also say the guess really isn't something that's actionable, because ultimately you have to build a portfolio that is designed to endure ups and downs in the economy and the market cycle and all that. And so where we are in the cycle over the next 5-10 years really doesn't matter today, because in the next 5 or 10 years, things are going to get better. They're going to get worse multiple times. That said, my guess would be, sitting here right now, I think the stock market has had a good year already. I think it's probably had about as good a year as I thought at the beginning of the year it was going to have for the entire year. My guess would be the next half of the year is probably a lot sideways, maybe grinds a little bit higher. I don't see a lot of great tailwinds that would send the market way up. I don't see a bunch of things that are at risk of sending the market way down. I think it's going to be a little bit choppy. We'll get into earnings season, see where things shake out. I think the bond market continues to look really good after having the worst year ever last year in the bond market. So we really like bonds at this point, kind of neutral on stocks. Get into next year, see how we do. If we have a slight recession, not. I don't think it's a big deal, but I think investor confidence, that herding behavior we've seen this year, I think when we get to early next year, we're gonna have a sense of clarity. Even though we never really have clarity, we're going to have a sense probably of a little more clarity.
And that clarity is always important for the investor and the market.
Right. That's exactly right.
Yeah, clarity and stability. And that always, the market performs well. I know I was reading, I think it was something from Bespoke, and I'm not a big fan of them, but it was pretty interesting, that after inflation has come down and we've had the rate hikes, we have the market usually responds in a positive way.
Right.
So, you know, again, that's not predicting the future, but just simply saying history has told us some things. And so that's a pretty good idea that we're looking for a reasonable understanding of what's happening.
Yeah, and it's good to keep in mind to that end that the stock market tends to be a leading indicator. So it could be that the reason the stock market has had a good year so far this year is anticipation that inflation that we've now seen coming down would continue coming down. So it may not be that we see recession fall, then the market runs up. We've seen recession coming down. The market's been going up, and it could be that the market's just anticipating that we might actually, like Greg said, skate out of this without any kind of a measurable recession.
You know, it's amazing you say that. And reality is we've been talking about this now for 6 months, or actually longer. And recession. This, and we've said mild recession. Oh, no, you've had people predicting the big. And now we're almost talking like, you know, well, maybe not even a recession. So
that's right.
The economy, as we try to say to everybody, you build a portfolio not based on what you think's going to happen in the market. You just build a strategy based on what you're trying to accomplish long term.
You just have to endure. There's some amount. I mean, just some. Just stick-to-itiveness is part of the deal.
Well, that's why I want to lean in now, Scott. You talk about this a lot. We talk about following the herd, and you know, the reality being, as I mentioned earlier, that Gen Zers are now making financial decisions with their 401k and other things they're making, and they're doing it through their friends and what they read on Facebook, and then again. At least they're doing something, but we know that's a dangerous thought process to follow the herd. You really talk a lot about that. But give us some insight into just building a portfolio. I mean, last week we talked about conversations, you know, where the person really spends time understanding, and you ask questions, Steve asks questions, the family needs to get around the table and ask questions. You talk about defining their goals, knowing what they're trying to do, and then getting organized. And we covered that. We talked about, and so many people can think they're organized, but when you really take it out and examine what you're currently doing financially, that can be sometimes an eye-opener for a lot of people. And then, as I just said, create the strategy. Keep those emotions out of it. What else now? Well, let's talk about this when it comes to portfolio construction. Do you see as critical for anybody building that portfolio?
The first thing I was saying, you did a good job of summarizing what we talked about last time, is we always want to develop an investment framework or an investment strategy or policy well anchored to a financial plan. In other words, we have some things that we're trying to accomplish, whether that's financial independence, I want to buy a lake home, I need to educate my kids. There are goals that we have that we're trying to accomplish that are going to take money to accomplish. And we can put some numbers around those goals. We can quantify those goals. And then we can develop an investment strategy that has a high probability of giving us those returns that we need in order to hit those goals. That is a principled way to develop an investment strategy, not listening to friends. I love what Steve said about the recession, inflation, all the news of the day. It's just not actionable. That's a great way to think of it when you're looking at developing, you know, where you got a friend that tells you they know something that's fixing to happen in the economy or with a particular company or with a sector. Those things are generally not actionable for long-term goals and just not advisable.
You know, I think sometimes, and I guess I want you guys listening, I want you to understand something. We talk about this a lot, but it's a fundamental, and it's one of those things that there's no way to shove it off the table and say you can't think about it. Scott's talking about it. Steve's talking about it. A strategy, knowing what you're trying to accomplish and then building the strategy around your goals. That is so fundamental, and then taking the emotions off the table because you got a long range or whatever you're trying to, whether it's retirement, college education funding, you know, a house you're trying to buy, or whatever you're doing, you're building around that objective, and that's, you become passionate about that.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
That's not easy.
And then it becomes, okay, how do we develop that portfolio based on what we're trying to accomplish? And we use principled strategies. You know, we talk about this a lot: asset allocation, diversification, and rebalancing the portfolio, if you can remember those three things. But, you know, the first thing we have to decide is, okay, we have dollars to invest. How are we going to allocate those? And that's going to be largely determined by, A, what are we trying to accomplish? What's our time horizon on that? What's our capacity or appetite or tolerance for risk, you know, because we have to be able to stick with this plan long term. And then we can start to say, okay, how much am I going to put in stocks? How much am I going to put in bonds? How much am I going to put in cash? Those are the three broad categories when we talk about investments. And again, that is not determined by, you know, some sort of get rich quick mentality or what we think is going to happen in the near future in the macroeconomic environment. That's determined by our goals and what we're trying to accomplish.
What about the person, and I'm asking both of you guys this, what about the person who starts and stops? You know what I mean? They're, and I know the people listening right now say, oh, that's me. I really get excited in this January, and I'm working through this process, and I know I'm doing a good job, but I get sidetracked, and I need to go do something over here. And so how do you avoid that stop-start mentality?
Well, I think it's having a structured process in place. And I don't know if you're talking about starting and stopping investing or starting and stopping saving, but, when it comes to cash flows and looking at what you're going to do with your money, it's about putting a plan in place and sticking with it.
Now, discipline,
absolutely. And then from an investment standpoint, I see a lot of starting and stopping on that. And some of that's based off of news media or headlines and people getting fearful or, you know, first they get fear of loss because they're hearing all this negative stuff out in the news. And then when the economy starts doing well, it kind of flips to the other side. You get that fear of missing out that we started to see in 21 where, you know, meme stocks and other things get real popular and people want to jump on the bandwagon on that. And again, this goes back to having that strategy in place and having that discipline in place of, okay, what are we trying to accomplish? What type of returns we need to hit that goal? Let's put a portfolio together that we're going to stick with for the long term that has a high probability of giving us those returns we need and not get swayed by emotions, news media, friends at the water cooler telling us how great they're doing and all those types of things that can derail that long-term strategy.
Yeah, to that end, I'll predict the future. I'm about to tell you what's going to happen.
Okay, oh, wow. Go, ready? Everybody listen up.
Something is going to happen at some point. Something is going to happen in the market, in the economy. The market's going to go one direction or another. And then somebody's going to raise their hand and say, hey, I predicted that. Right?
Oh.
Right? They're going to do that. And here's the deal. If you put 100 people in a room together, somebody probably statistically has your birthday. Right?
That's
we
true.
Know
yeah.
that's true.
Yeah.
Right? However, what we're talking about is not does somebody have your birthday in the room. What we're talking about is can you walk into the room and pick the one person that has your birthday? And the answer is no.
No.
Just like we can't predict ahead of time what's really going to happen. Somebody's going to be right, but that's not the way to design your future. Like stocks, like Scott said, it's you have to have a disciplined approach because you can't pick the dude that has your birthday and you can't pick the exact black swan event that's going to occur for positive or for
worse.
So
it could be
right?
an alien or a 9/11.
Could be an alien.
Whatever.
It could be an alien. It could be the AI transforms business and all of a sudden the market goes ripping up.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't know.
And then
you
it's time know. To write a book, right? And you...
Right.
You see guys,
make
these guys all the time.
On the book. They made $100 on their investment.
Right.
$1 million
right. But, you know, you see them all the time. They're called perma bears or whatever. They make a career out of predicting doomsday. And, you know, every now and then one of them will get it right. Even a broken clock's right twice a day. And then when they do, then they become the expert that everybody suddenly goes to say, hey, here's the guy that predicted the last downturn. Let's see what he thinks about
That's
the next
right.
one. And there's no indication that just because he got that one right.
By the way, he gets his newsletter out, and
That's
he's
right.
a hero. Yeah, I
right.
got it there.
Right.
You know, guys, we talk about it. We preach it. The reality is we're trying to convey a fundamental, and we talk about asset allocation. We talk about diversification, and the reality is neither asset allocation nor diversification guarantees against loss. I mean, that's not where right. all we're talking about is a method that we use to manage risk and people
Absolutely.
Understanding their risk. This is the way to do it. That's the principle that we talk about. Guys, you've done a great job. Close it out, Steve. What you going to say?
Yeah, well, when you mention the word risk, I like certain words. Risk is the possibility, in my mind, of not reaching your goal. Volatility is the ups and downs that we experience. I think it's just important to keep in mind. We're trying to mitigate risk, the potential of reaching our long-term goals, volatility is just part of it.
And I would add to that that as we're trying to mitigate risks and go through that volatility and we're using these principles, asset allocation, diversification, rebalance, it's important to understand the trade-offs of that. And the trade-off is a multi-asset portfolio is not going to always outperform certain sectors of the market. There's always going to be some area that's going to be doing better than you are. Again, sticking with that strategy for the long term, that's what leads to success.
Amen. That's perfectly well said, guys. I want to thank my guests, of course, Mr. Valliere. We'll appreciate him so much. Steve Anderson and Scott Jordan, if you would like to talk to them, telephone number 901-757-5757. You can find our show, Talk Money, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Search for Talk Money with Jim Shoemaker and subscribe to the program. If you have questions, you can type them to Jim to the text line, 901-683-0989. Next week, my guest, Scott Jordan, will be here again answering your questions. And this time, even though we've really tried to get at this show this time, next week it's going to be about estate planning, and you won't want to miss that. Dane Williams, why should you use an independent insurance agent? That is a great question, and that's going to be the question that you want to listen to. But also, Rob Clement, did you know that U.S. seniors lose $28.3 billion annually resulting from a financial exploitation? You don't want to miss this program because he's going to talk about some issues with friends, family members, and caregivers. Don't want to miss that. That's Saturday morning at 7 a.m. and Sunday at 9 a.m. I want to thank my producers, Tyler Springs and Maximilian, guest and content coordination, Francis Fortner, production and marketing assistant, Laura Norsworthy, compliance officer, Tommy Armstrong. Thanks so much for listening. We are for you here each and every week, helping you make the most of your money. I'm Jim Shoemaker. This is Talk Money.
Jim Shoemaker, Scott Jordan, and Steve Anderson are registered representatives and investment advisor representatives of Securian Financial Services, Inc., securities dealer, member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor. Shoemaker Financial is independently owned and operated.
Helping you make the most of your money. This has been Talk Money with Jim Shoemaker on News Talk 98.9.